Hey guys, today on the podcast, we have SoulCycle instructor extraordinaire David Zint. And also, we're going to tell you about an opportunity if you are in the Los Angeles area to come and actually meet us and take a SoulCycle class with us. It's pretty exciting.
And with David, which makes it even better.
Even better. And also, we want to tell you, listen up, because this is really important
news. We
have
like crazy, incredible guests coming on over the next several weeks. We've got Robin Berman, Dr. Berman, as I like to call her, the author of Permission to Parent. And we also have Janet Lansbury, the author of No Bad Kids and also Elevating Childcare.
And we have such amazing conversations with both of these incredible women and authors. And in fact, I just want to say a big shout out to my neighbors that when I told them we were having Janet Lansbury on the podcast, they were like blown away. So we're big time now, people. That's what we're saying.
We're basically saying we're obsessed with the two authors that you will be getting to hear from soon. And we also interview Fashletics CEO Sarah Wilson. And new listeners, if you might have just found us through SoulCycle, we want to let you know that you'd probably really love our episode with Angie Green Fletcher. She was a super inspiring guest of ours who is an incredible triathlete and kicks ass.
Yeah. And so subscribe because you can download all of our previous podcasts. There's a bunch of them. And you guys, there's something in each for everybody. So,
and because iTunes only shows the most 20 recent. And I promise you're going to want to dig deeper. So please subscribe. You can find us on Twitter at Atomic Moms, on Facebook at Atomic Moms. And we'll be right back with the show.
Woohoo!
Hello, hello, hello.
It's so good to see you. Hello.
This is Ellie.
Bianca. And awesome singing advice.
And we are Atomic Moms Podcast.
Hey, we have a special guest today who also is connected to a special event that we're doing. And we're really excited to tell you guys about it because, look, if you live in the LA area or you're near us in Los Angeles,
we want to invite you next Monday, which is August 17th
at 11:30
a.m. We are doing a private event with SoulCycle Hollywood.
I'm going to pass out on the bike. It's going to happen.
So it is a 45-minute class that is going to be taught by David Zint, who is today's guest on Atomic Moms.
Yeah, and we're so excited. Ellie has been taking his class for a while now, and she loves him, and he's one of SoulCycle's most sought-after instructors. And we were lucky enough to sit down with him, and then through that interview, we get to actually go and have a fun Atomic Moms SoulCycle
party.
Class. Yes, party on a bike, you guys. So listen, if you feel like traveling a little bit to get to us, or you actually live in Los Angeles, you can email us
AtomicMomsPodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's AtomicMomsPodcast@gmail.com. And we will forward you all the information. It's 11:30, August 17th, RSVP for Girlfriend 2. Space is limited, so hurry.
Yeah, and actually, you know, get there at like 11 so we can say hi and mingle and set up your bike. And just, it's going to be such an inspiring, fun celebration of mamas and papas everywhere, papas too. So if you're a couple and you want to come. We'd love to meet you and get in touch with you. And, you know, it's really nice to be able to see our listeners face to face. And you guys, we're just going to have a really good time.
And David Zint is such an incredible teacher, and it's going to be so fun and inspiring and silly. And I'm so excited for you all to get to listen to the next hour with him.
So let's get to it.
With each breath, with each pedal stroke, I want you to stand in your courage, stand in your conviction, release your judgments, release your doubts, pull those hips back over that saddle, take a big inhale. What you offer up is what you will receive back down. So offer up your strength, offer up your power, offer up your conviction, release your judgment, release your fears, and release your doubts. Tap it back.
So we have David Zint here, and we're so excited.
Hello.
I do the lone clap.
I can join you in this. David, can you talk to us a little bit about your path?
Yeah. To me, I've always been really into fitness and the whole mind, body, spiritual connection that it has. And in particular, I'm a senior SoulCycle instructor, which if you don't know what that is, it's an indoor cycling class which mixes a couple different elements. It's a full body workout, but it also has a really spiritual element to it. It has a very life coaching, motivational element to it. It has a very party, cardio party aspect to it. The music's really, really great in there. It's candlelit. The music's loud. People go in there without judgment, without assumptions about one another. And I've always been drawn to the fact that when you get into that room, we get ourselves hyped up into this state. You get all these endorphins going, okay? And so then the words that we're able to speak to people, they really land, you know, because you're in this place where you're fighting to hold the beat. You know, you're putting on so much resistance on that wheel that you're exhausting your legs, you're exhausting your muscles. So you're changing your body, but at the same time, you allow your heart to be really open and be really vulnerable. So I sort of fell in love with that aspect of it. And I thought, wow, this is an opportunity for me to sort of explain what my journey is and what I call my purpose. Because I feel like, along with being a father and being a husband, that being a SoulCycle instructor is one of my really, really big purposes and gifts in life. Like, I feel like I have a lot to give in that room. In the words that I speak, and
you do.
Sort of
I end up sobbing. Okay, I end up sobbing,
which to most of our listeners is no big surprise.
No, I know. True, but I. Oh my god, no, because it feels. I was trying to explain this to a neighbor friend of mine the other night. I was like, I end up working out so hard. The barriers have to drop because I'm so exhausted.
Right,
and so you end up working so hard that you don't really have a choice, or I don't really have a choice, but to let go. And then every time, and I want to speak to you more about this stuff, because you end up doing a lot of manifesting kind
right.
of stuff towards the end of the class. And whenever you ask us like to envision, like what are we running towards or what do we see? That is always when I'm clearest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... That's been the most useful aspect for me. I mean, not even like the calorie burning, which is great. You get in and out in 45 minutes. You're sweating like a pig. And then you feel really accomplished. But for me, it's been like the clarity that it's brought to my life. That when I am near that end of the class, like whatever I'm envisioning or whatever I see, like that feels so much more like my personal truth than a lot of what I tell myself throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also think that for a lot of people, you know, they haven't gotten a chance to have that connection with mind and body. And I think a lot of people don't understand how much our, you know, you think like, oh, I'm going to the gym because I want to lose weight, or I'm going to the gym because I want to look better. But we don't understand, or a lot of people don't understand how important it is that those are both dealt with in the same blow. So like there are people you hear say like, I go on a run because I can get in touch with myself. It's like there's something about that expelling even just literally the sweat, mm-hmm. you know, clears you out. Mm-hmm. And I always think too, like in the SoulCycle classes that I've taken, that music, and because you're on a bike and you're watching somebody lead you, your mind is able to wander a little bit, and mm-hmm. you're able to think about things that sometimes in life we don't even take the time to just sit and yeah. think about.
Do you know what I think happens? It's twofold. One, I think it's like any other process or any other, because it's a craft, really. I mean, it's something you get better at. It's like a sport. It's like painting. It's like reading. It's like writing. The more that you do it, the more that you do the exercise, you get better at the actual craft. But then something sort of takes over where you get so hyped up that sort of this magic happens, this clip happens where you clear out the cobwebs. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with like Julia Cameron, who does The Artist's Way. And she talks about every morning you wake up, you get the cobwebs out, you do those morning pages. Well, I kind of feel like that just happens in the beginning of the class. No matter how tired you are, no matter how tired you are at night, you just start pedaling. You just start writing, you know, you just start doing. And I think after you take those first few steps, by the end, you've cleared out all that emotional baggage. You've cleared all that clutter. Then you have that clarity to manifest. Then you have that vision. And then it becomes so clear to you. That's why you walk out of there and you're like, now I know what I want. Now I know what I need. Yeah. And better, more importantly, now I know how to ask for it. Because I think a lot of people walk into that room and they don't really know how to ask for what they want. And I think you give them permission in that room through the physical excitement by getting them out of that place of judgment, out of that place of fear. And you sort of tip the scale so that they're like, I have this clarity.
And tapping into the strength,
yes.
like feeling the power.
Yeah.
And also the energy of everyone around you, right? Oh, it's so good.
Well, and I think that also, you know, having kids, and you have one child, right?
Yeah, she'll be 2 in September.
2. And what's her
very
name?
Similar. Her name's Harlow Grace.
Harlow, that's right. Yeah. I love that name, Harlow, so much. One thing that I've really noticed with Magnolia is that it's made me very aware of how far away from my base I've gotten. You know, it's like we come into this world so open and so daring and so free to kind of not care about making mistakes and to be creative and to just play wherever we are, to bring that sense of wonderment into all of the things that we do. And then life happens and we get into the, you know, really literally the rat race, and it's the 9 to 5 and I've got to get this to get this to get this, and you lose that. And being with your child, I feel like, brings you back. And for some people, it may actually scare them because they don't know, they don't identify with that anymore. But for me, it's really made me want to try to, like, I'm starting to try and just leave my phone behind when I sit down with my daughter so I can be present to that. Because I feel like I can learn so much from just being with her while she's in it. So I'm sure as a father, you know, now you have that in your work.
Everything changed when she was born. In my teaching, in my life, she was such a lesson in that you don't have to be perfect to get started. You just have to be present. You just have to take that first step. Because she's not afraid of falling, you know. Yeah, like they scratch themselves up, they get right back up, they laugh, you know, they color on the walls, they don't judge it. Like, as an adult, we're the people who judge it. Like, we start to judge it. And I think that's what's so amazing when you get into that room. Like, it doesn't matter if you're an Olympic athlete, it doesn't matter if you're a mom of 5 kids who hasn't worked out in 5 years, you clip into that bike and you realize, I don't have to be perfect. You know, I don't have to do every bit of choreography. I just have to start pedaling.
Yeah.
I just have to take that first step.
One thing, you know, too, that also I've so enjoyed, and I think is what keeps me coming back, besides the fact that it's a great workout, is also that, you know, Ellie and I have told you, like, what we're attempting to do with this podcast is to really give a universal place where everyone can feel accepted and everyone can feel like their opinion or their way of doing it is valid. And much like SoulCycle, it's like, I remember my first class I ever took and I heard people talking about this. I'm like, I'm going to go do it. And I got on the bike and it's like the first beats of music started. And it was like, just everyone, what's it called? Is it just running when you're just, what's the term?
Well, out of the saddle, you jog, run. Right. If it's a little faster, it's called a run.
Yeah. And then the beat hit and everyone started going up and down together. And I felt so connected to everyone in the room. And I think, like, all of us are so thirsting for that. But the only thing that we've been taught is separation, because everything is about getting ahead, being the best, winning, all, you know, succeeding to the extent that we've forgotten what our connection to everyone else is. And I feel like whenever I'm in that room,
Like I'm in an animal pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you? Don't you feel like you're connected to everybody
like
else?
Like,
you're not competing
Geographic.
With one another. Yeah. You're rising
each other up. You're feeding off of each other's energy. And except for the few times I'll like get off beat.
No, and one of my friends actually had a really funny story too about how she did go to a SoulCycle class, and she was like, after the class, she was like, I felt so like in it and connected, and these were my compadres. And I turned to the girl next to me and she wanted nothing to do with me. And she was like, but we were unified. We were together.
Yeah. And then at the end, like when people have to leave for the showers. So it's like, I was at a class last week and Pixie said, she was like, hey, turn to the person next to you and like give them a high five or something. And she was like out for the shower. And I was like, oh, because you do feel like this cool connection. Like,
absolutely.
It's really special. And then the other cool thing about it is I feel like we're doing an infomercial for SoulCycle now. Anyway, what I love is when you show up, no one's wearing makeup. And I feel like that's a sign of a good workout. Like no one wears makeup. Everyone already like – nobody's trying. Like, it looks like I went to a women's college, and so nobody tried. And that's what it feels like when I go to SoulCycle. Like, everyone just shows up ready to do their work because they know that, like, by the end of the class, if you're wearing makeup, it'll be melted down your face anyway.
Yeah. What did you do before SoulCycle?
Before? Well, I'm also a screenwriter as well. So awesome. I still do screenwriting as well. And then I've always been into fitness. I'm a personal trainer. I taught indoor cycling before SoulCycle as well, a little bit. So
SoulCycle started in New York, correct? And then were you in New York or you've always been in
No, I've LA. Always been in Los Angeles. Yeah, I started when a little bit after the first studio in West Hollywood opened out here, which was in 2012, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you were saying that you've always been kind of on this path and whatnot. So did you hear about it and knew that it vibed with kind of your aesthetic and the way that you, I mean, how excited were you? When
absolutely.
You,
like, I mean, I'd always been, like I had mentioned earlier, I'd always been into fitness and sort of the journey of the mind body and how you can sort of, I always had this feeling after I worked out that I was like, wow, I'm present now at mm-hmm. the time for my girlfriend, you know, I'm present, you know, like things don't get me angry as quickly. I let things roll off my back yeah. a little more. I like realize I, what's I really go important, for a you run. Know?
Like when I, like something will bug me in the morning and I'll be like, I'm not going to deal with it yet. And I go for a run and just 30 minutes later and I take a shower and then it's like, that thing is not a thing anymore. Yeah. And it's crazy because I could have like, just like, you know, it can be so destructive to like follow those in like impulses at times. Like if yeah. somebody, you know, if someone's late or your things are not as you expect them to be and then yeah. go on that run. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal.
You know, cause I say in class all the time, I'm like, you can get what you want out of it. Like some classes are really heavy and really deep and people have huge emotional breakthroughs. And other classes, it's like, you know what? I just want to dance on this bike and I don't want to flick off the person who cuts me off on the 405. Right. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. that's extremely valid as well. You know, or I just want to have that extra breath that I count to three, you know, when my third child is crying and, you know, and I'm able to take a breath and realize like what's really important, you know? So I think it really, I think it levels our emotions out, you know? I think it gives us this sense of clarity, the sense of, okay, it's going to be okay. If I can handle it in that room, I can handle whatever this day has for me.
Yeah.
And when did you start your spiritual journey? Because I feel like a lot of your class is very spiritual.
Absolutely.
I harassed David after class one day, asking him for a book to read. And he suggested The Untethered Soul, which is why I keep talking about it, everyone. So anyway.
You've been talking about it quite a bit on the blog.
Yeah, on the podcast. Yep. Rather. Yep. Yeah. So where did, how did that it? Start? I'm like 75% through. I'm okay. listening to it.
Okay. Have you read it?
I haven't. It's on my list.
But everyone
should. It's fantastic.
But it's so good, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then I go into like a total spiral.
Yeah.
Because he talks about how like you're not, you know, you're just like this little thing on a planet spinning in the universe. That's empty. And like, we are. And you go into this whole like existential crisis. Like, but it's really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. To answer your question, I've sort of, it came pretty early for me. I would say around the, in high school, it's probably going to sound cliched, but I read The Catcher in the Rye, which I'm sure a lot of high schoolers did, but that sort of changed everything for me. I really related to Holden Caulfield and I was like, wow, here's someone who at the time was older than me, you know, the mm-hmm. character in the book. And I was like, I really relate to this guy questioning things and like sort of seeing through what he called phonies. And that was sort of the trajectory. I grew up in a relatively Catholic home. We went to mass, I would say once a week, and then on the big holidays. So religion was always a big part of my upbringing. And faith was really always really important to me. But what wasn't instilled in me was questioning. And so that book really allowed me to sort of question things and to sort of want to pick apart dogma and sort of want to see what are the answers for me, you know, in life? Like, what are the truths for me? And that sort of started me on the journey pretty early. And it just continued through college. And then when I moved out to Los Angeles in the late 90s.
Did you do yoga or retreats or?
Funny enough, my wife got me into yoga about, I'd say 12 years ago. Because she's a dancer. So she always had that very like body fluid. Like for her, which she's an avid soul cycler. I don't know if you,
yes,
have you two
yes,
met
yes,
her?
Yes,
you've
yes.
met her, right?
No, I haven't met her, but I've seen her.
You've seen her.
On the stage.
Yeah, on the podium. Yeah. She rides all the time. She's beautiful
amazing.
Up there. So she's always been very connected to music, very connected to dance and expressing yourself through your body. So that's always been a part of her journey. So she really introduced me to yoga. And to me, it was a game changer for me. I thought, you know, at first I was like, oh, I don't know if yoga's for me. Like, I'm going to be the only guy in there. But I went in there, and obviously in Los Angeles, there's a lot of dudes in there. There's a lot of guys in there. And
it's all the good-looking actors.
Yeah, it wasn't what
I
thought.
11 a.m. because no one has real jobs. It's great.
That's when I went. I went at 12:30, and there's like 60 people in the class. I was like, don't these people have jobs?
No, nobody
does.
It's like an hour and a half class. You get out at like 2. You're like, really?
Yeah, people were hanging out having coffee after. I'm like, do you go to work at night? No, they're coming back later. You know,
it's very European in L.A. Like,
yeah, right? It is. So I fell in love with it, you know? It took me a few classes, though. I was like, to really like, I always hear the stories. I don't know if you two meditate, but I've meditated a little bit, and I go and it ebbs and flows. Like sometimes I'm really into it, sometimes I'm not. But I had a very similar experience with yoga where I'm like, is this what I'm supposed to be thinking? Is this where I'm supposed to be? You know, where it's like, am I meditating? I'm not meditating. Should you look around the room? Like, am I doing it? Like, but eventually that voice just goes away and you're kind of in it. So that's been a nice journey.
That's wonderful. Yeah. We'll be right back. This summer, Audible is partnering with James Patterson, one of the world's best-selling authors, to create a program that encourages young readers to find their way to books by listening to audiobooks, as well as promoting family listening parties.
A reluctant reader himself and the father of a reluctant reader, James Patterson's commitment to inspiring children to find fun and entertainment in reading has been an extremely personal mission for years.
So head on over to audible.com/Patterson, that's P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, to find special recommendations, discounted audiobooks, reading guides for families, and more.
With children home from school this summer and families looking for opportunities to spend time together, listening to audiobooks is the perfect way to keep everyone thoughtfully entertained while helping children perpetuate a love for books and reading.
Unlike movies, video games, and other activities that require children to stay in one place, audiobooks are uniquely suited to entertain kids and families while they are otherwise occupied. Children can listen to engaging stories while cleaning their rooms. Families can listen while on the road to their vacation destination or while clearing the table after dinner. The possibilities and opportunities are endless.
Countless studies have confirmed the ability of audiobooks to improve early literacy skills, expand vocabularies, elevate comprehension, and more. So please join Audible and James Patterson to get kids reading and listening to audiobooks.
Once again, the website is audible.com/Patterson. That's audible.com/PATTERSON.
We're back.
We're back. Okay. I recently read one of David's blogs for SoulCycle. So I'm going to share a little quote from him. I want to show, not just talk, about motivation and drive with my daughter. I want her to know that it takes just as much time and energy to complain as it does to take action and fix these complaints. That if you can envision it, you can create it. That we build, work, and will for the lives and relationships and successes we want, not wish them. So can we talk about that a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like anything, the scariest part of anything that we want is to give ourselves permission to allow it, to just take that first step, like I mentioned before, take that first pedal stroke, have that first manifestation of it, have that first inception, that creative little seed. Once we have that, I feel like you've started. You just start by starting. Whatever it is, you just get out there and you start it. Because I feel like the fear, the biggest fear is beginning. The biggest fear is saying, I'm not good enough to start this project. I'm too old. I'm too tired. Like all these excuses that we make up for, I can't start playing the piano now. I can't be an actor now. I can't start writing now. Whatever it is.
I'm not perfect already.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not automatically.
And to me, fear is the one thing that says you have to be perfect at everything. You know, whereas if you have faith, you just have to have action. That's all you have to do. You just have to take that first step.
And that's what excites me so much because you, with the class, it feels like you're telling people to have their dreams, but you're also, you follow up with like, it takes action. And I think sometimes it feels like one or the other. People are either like, you need to just keep like banging your head against the wall till it happens, or you sit and meditate on it and like allow it to come to you. But sometimes that feels too passive. And it's like, no, we have to be active.
Because you see, you see both sides all the time. You see the quote unquote dreamers who, you know, don't put any action into it. You have great ideas, but if you're not willing to build it and work for it, it's not going to get you very far. But if all you do is work for it, but you don't have faith in it and you don't believe, then you're sort of manifesting what you don't want rather than what you do want. You know,
I think this is the hardest part of it, though, is that we're all different in our approach to things. And we all have our own neuroses and our own baggage that we bring to the table. And I think the hardest part is that it's not one size fits all for everybody. And so while there is somebody where being active would be what they need to do to get up in the morning and write their pages or do whatever it is that they need to make them feel like they're moving forward towards something, there's somebody else that maybe overthinks things and they need to set back.
For sure. But that's where I think there's that balance, right? Because I think it is both. Because like I look at you and you're always like, I think you allow things to come in and you meditate on it and you know, you're like, this feels good. But then you also have this incredible action behind what you do. Like, because no, I've never met someone who's like more willing to like jump off the diving board than Bianca. Like if it feels good to her, she sits, she let, you know, if it feels good, you'll like literally, I'm the one, I get to the end of the diving board and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know the water's cold. Or not. And then once I jump, it's really fun. Or once like we hold hands or she pushes me, it's great. But like you do, you know.
But the problem you know, the is I also, I have an initial really strong fire and then I get bored. And then I'm like, oh, sparkly thing over there. Yeah. And I go to the other side. So like this is why I think it's so important for people to understand how special and unique they are. Because I think what happens is you see somebody doing it one way or that person over there did it this way. And that's the way I need to do it. But we all have our own way. And you have to trust that the right process is going to work for you. Because like Ellie and I, that's why we're so great as a team. Because I mean, look at Ellie has her pages all prepared. Everything's typed out for the podcast. I come in and I'm like, what are we talking about today? It's like, that's just who we are. And it works for both of us. And that doesn't mean we don't have our own issues or guilty feelings at times or, you know, nobody's perfect. But I think it's very important. And this is goes back to what we were talking about earlier with children. It's like children come in and they understand themselves. They know what they need to make things happen. They know how they need to get from A to B. And somewhere along the way, however we've advanced in schooling them or educating them, I feel like we've done a disservice because we take that secure feeling away. Kids get to a place where they don't trust themselves anymore. And that becomes us as adults. And that's why there's so many people in your classes sitting there going, preach to me, because we've lost it. And we ache for it. We want it so badly.
Well, and it's also about the journey. And I think that's probably part of what people have lost, right? It's like my daughter, who's almost two, doesn't necessarily know how to get to A, from A to B, but she'll figure it out along the way. And that's part of the fun. And we're always like trying to get to be already.
Yeah, obsessed with the destination and not enjoying the journey.
Well, and you know, it's interesting too, because I think like we feel like as parents, you know, I'm going to show her, I'm going to guide her, and I'm going to, you know, and maybe she doesn't have the tools yet, but the knowledge, the inner awareness is there. I mean, I do think we've talked about how kids these days are coming in more aware, more present than ever. And, you know, I did this Kundalini yoga workshop and they said children come in with their third eye wide open and that all kids have insane intuition and that if you sit with them for long enough, they'll tell you incredible things.
Do you know what's tricky about, at least for parenting for me, is my daughter has this curiosity and she has this sense of wonderment and wanting to learn. And she has these instincts where if it doesn't feel right, then it's not right. You know, where I feel like as adults, it doesn't feel right and it's not right, but we still do
it. We do it anyway.
We do it anyway. And
it becomes like, I'm what's not right.
And I think the challenge is giving them the tools, you know, to mold into who they want to be, but not letting those tools that you're giving them interfere with those wonderment and those tools that they're born with that... I think it was a developmental psychologist who said, once you name it a flower, it no longer becomes a flower anymore to them.
Yeah.
Now it's this name. So it's not this like wonderment in their head. Like you've called it something that it wasn't to them. Yeah. So it can no longer be a flower to them anymore. I know that sounds really heady, but.
No, it sounds right up our alley.
It's kind of heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is, in a way.
Because sometimes I watch her and I'm like, she's like on an acid trip. And this is amazing to watch. Do you know what I mean, though?
They are
pretending like they know what I mean. But I promise there's one listener out there who's like, yes, I know what you mean.
I absolutely know what you mean. And I want some of it.
I want that wonderment.
She's taking. Yes. It's
in the colors and seeing and then she will spot, like we said in another podcast about the magician and how children are much harder to fool because you can't direct their attention, right? So they'll spot things. And I moved something in our backyard the other day and within 2 seconds she was outside and she saw it. And it was something in the corner that my husband will probably take another 2 weeks to notice. But because they're just soaking it all in, they can see everything that we're missing with our blinders.
I mean, think about this. What if you two went out to dinner and within 10 minutes, let's say you threw a fit, you threw your plate on the floor, you cried, and then you hysterically laughed. Like, you would be deemed crazy, but our children are like, it's just accessible. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
I think that all the time when I see her, I'm like, are you insane?
I read a great article at one point, and I'll have to find it so we can post it, because it was really fascinating to me about tantrums, about toddlers' tantrums, and about how we don't understand them as adults, that to express yourself that openly is so unacceptable as an adult person, that it makes us so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that it's just that there's no censor on them. It's what it is right there. You know, it's like they talked about the Dalai Lama. It's like when you sat with him, you knew exactly what he was experiencing, because he was so in mm-hmm. tune and at peace and in the moment with himself. It's there. And that's our children.
That's like watching Robert Downey Jr. act.
Yeah.
God. It is.
No, I know. I'm agreeing with you.
Which is probably, but see, then there's that. Okay. Well, then we talk. I don't know. This is a total tangent, but then the idea of addiction and stuff like that, like that there are people that probably cannot handle, they have that like a child does, right? And then they're so sensitive, and then like they can't handle the real world mm-hmm. because of that sensitivity.
But that goes in line with what I was saying earlier about everyone has their strengths and their weaknesses. Right. And I think sometimes usually your biggest strength is also your biggest weakness. But like, we haven't evolved into a society of people that accepts all those differences. We keep trying. And I think that's what's partially at the root of our mental illness problem, which I think is what's at the root of everything, but that's a whole nother podcast. Because we don't accept people as they are. And we do say, you're too sensitive for this, or you're too ambitious, or mm-hmm. you're too selfish. And we keep molding everyone into this narrow funnel that we expect everyone to process through. And it's not fair, because we're all so special and unique and different. And my husband does a podcast, a radio show, but also podcast with Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew always gets mad. He's like, enough of this. We are unique snowflakes bullshit. Like, but it's true.
Am I the Dr. Drew in this in our relationship? Kind of. I'm the one with the notes.
I think you're right. It's like trying to parent every child the same. You can't.
You can't do it. And this is why it's so important that parents parent the way that they. I know it's huge. And I mean, look, both Ellie and I and you are very new to it. We're just mm-hmm. on the threshold of jumping off the cliff. And probably there's so much to come we can't even imagine. It's so important that you get to a place where you feel confident in yourself to know what's best for your child. In kind of, Mike and I were trying to come up with an analogy the other day mm-hmm. of what it means to be a parent. Mm-hmm. We're like, mm-hmm. Mike's like, I think it's kind of like you're like one of those troughs that like the river is flowing down and you just kind of like hold the space and direct where the water should go. And I said, no, it's like being a lifeguard where you watch. And as long as the kids are swimming in the pool and they're being okay, but if they start to drown, you got to jump in. And we went back and forth for like an hour. It's it's like.
But you know what that reminds me of? My wife and I, when we were first putting her in her crib, and there's the two schools of thought. You coddle them and you bring them in and you co-sleep, or you let the cry it out method.
Yeah.
And so we were torn. We're like, which method are we going to do? So we tried the cry it out one night, and it ripped our hearts out. Like, we couldn't stand it. Like, the screeching. And then we coddle her, we co-slept, and then it was fine. So then the next night we're like, you know what? We're reading all these books. Like, what would you want to do? Like, what are your instincts saying? So she started to cry. So we walked in there. We didn't pick her up, but we stood right there and we just talked to her, and we're like, we're not leaving you. We're right here, but you're in your crib. You're okay. And she just fell asleep. The next night she cried. We walked in, we stood there. We didn't pick her up, mm-hmm. but we just let her know that we weren't going to abandon her. And I was like, there's our method. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Good. Yeah. And that's so gorgeous that you like trusted yourself enough to be in it, because we talked a lot on this podcast about how hard it is, because there's so much information out there and everybody proclaims to have the right way. And I think that's what begins to create the friction that we see on the mm-hmm. mom forums. And you were talking about before we started the podcast about how judgment and that it's not as prevalent as
Or mom's out at lunch talking about or anywhere.
Yeah.
Just that there's all these schools and a slight, oh, maybe my way's better, or like, what is that way that you're doing? Or, you know, whereas I feel like with dads, it's like, oh, did you try that? Oh, okay, I'll try that too. Like, there's just a willingness. Oh, and I'm sure there's fathers out there that are judging too.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
it doesn't seem as prevalent.
Yeah.
No, but maybe they just don't talk as much as we do.
I don't think that's true. But also they don't maybe take it as personally.
Yeah.
Right, because it feels like such a personal thing sometimes. Of like, what my way. And if someone else does it a different way, then does the mom think like, oh, well, then she's judging me, or that means my way isn't as good? Whereas a dad is like, he's just trying to keep the kid alive and happy healthy. Yeah. But it's not about – there's like an openness to it, whereas maybe a mother's self-identity is more wrapped up in the choices.
And I'm sure it's probably a bigger topic of just gender and how
– Yeah, women- but I – right. I think that that's you know, what I was saying earlier is just that that's because we are so unsure, because we don't feel confident in our choices. I think that's where that criticism and judgment comes from, because you get frightened when you hear someone else saying something and then you're like, shit, did I do it wrong? And then in order to not feel that, you need to, you know, get yourself all up on your hind legs and be the mama bear and say like, no, I did it this way. It's great. And that way's wrong, because it makes you feel more secure.
Yeah.
Instead of the fact that we're just comfortable in knowing like, I did the best I could, you know, if there's therapy sessions later because of it, then you know.
There will be anyway. I mean, especially if you live in LA, like we might as well start saving for that. As a daddy, how has working out changed for you, or like, how do you find the time for it? I mean, I know it's your career too.
Right.
Or one of your careers, but what is, I guess it's two questions. How has having a daughter changed you?
Mm-hmm.
And how can parents find time to work out when they're really tired and when it hasn't been their primary focus?
Yeah, and it's not their career like mine.
or my pretend career like mine.
I mean, to answer your first question, obviously you both know as mothers, like it changes everything. Like the birth of her was, I've never had a sense, I think especially moving out to Los Angeles and in this culture of wanting to make it or wanting to succeed, it flipped from, what is my day about productivity? What is my day about me taking one more step, me towards me and my career and what I want to accomplish with my dreams, to unselfish. Here's my purpose, being present, her rock, like allowing myself to take the focus and put it all on her. And that was a huge, huge shift. And I think you know it's coming, but until you have that child, until you have that baby in your arms, and until you experience those 2 months straight of sleepless nights, those tantrums and all of the trials and tribulations, you really can't grasp the magnitude of how it changes your life. I think it was, who was the actor that said, people who say having a child will greatly change your life understate it. Somebody said that. And I was like, that's it. Like, you can't find the words to say how much it changes your life.
The not being able to find the words, I think, is the key there. Because I think that it's like people try to tell you the best that they can. But there's something about, and I know I've tried to like pinpoint what it is, but I feel like it's something about that connection, that that band of energy that exists between you and your child, and this, that no matter what, you would do anything to keep them safe and happy. And it is exhausting. It's like being on the hamster wheel, isn't it?
It's
like Groundhog's Day every day. You're waking up, you're doing the same thing, but like you can't get off. Like there's no getting off.
No, you can't. I mean, even on vacation, you're not off.
No.
Of it. Like you don't sleep on vacation.
Vacations suck. We've talked about that many times.
It's not a vacation for the parents.
No. But it's it is. It's like a hamster wheel because you can never stop, and it's relentless.
Relentless,
right?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I catch myself being so much more grounded.
Yeah.
And so at other times, you know, it's this crazy – I feel like I'm schizophrenic because on the one hand, I'll feel so much more wound up, or just trying to get her out the door feels so exhausting and almost like – could just like break my will just to get her into the car seat sometimes. But then other times, because she'll be playing and I'll just be present with her, I'm like, oh, wow, I never would have let myself spend 30 minutes doing a puzzle before she was born.
Yeah.
I never would have gone to the park and laid on a blanket and, you know, studied leaves. you know, like these things that like you suddenly do when you're a parent.
Yeah.
So it's funny because it's like more of both.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to answer your second question,
I have so many questions.
Keep them coming. Finding the time to work out. I used to do a lot of strength training, and that sort of took a back seat because I'm teaching 12 to 14 classes a week. So I'm still, you know, I still get the strength training in the class, and I still get obviously a lot of cardio in the class, which I feel so blessed to be able to have a job where I'm like, oh, I get to dance on that bike and I get to work out too. But I've sort of discovered little tricks to do with her, you know, like she climbs on my back. I do push-ups with her on the back, and she's like, aww, more. I like throw her up in the air and like pretend she's a wall ball, like in CrossFit.
So I used to do kettlebell swings with her.
Yeah. She'll get on my shoulders. I'll do overhead squats with her on my shoulder. Like we'll go for runs, and there's so many different things that you can do just to stay active, you know?
What do you think is the biggest block for people with becoming active? Like why do you think that so many people resist it?
I think it's fear that they need to do it perfectly, you know, that they need to be an athlete to work out, or that they need to be in perfect shape to get started. But you don't. You just do what you need to do for that day. Like I say, you take that first step.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's a fear of weakness too, like that feel, because that can feel really scary sometimes. Like I'll try something new, and like to feel that,
I think a lot of people are afraid to find their own strength too.
Yes. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a, I'm sure you've read it as a screenwriter, the War of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And
Stephen Pressfield.
Yes. And he talks about, you know, that the voice of resistance is extremely reasonable, and it will make you think that these reasons why you're not doing these things, they make perfect sense. I mean, it really is a no-brainer why I'm not waking up and writing or doing whatever it is. And in his book, by the way, he talks about, he is a writer, but it applies to anything in life.
Everything. It is such a good book.
And
that's fantastic.
And if you think you don't have time to read it, you do, because it's like one little paragraph per page. It's so good.
Yeah,
it's
Audible. Amazing. Is it on Audible?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
that's one of our sponsors. Jinx. Double jinx.
No, but I was just going to say, I do think that like I think for a lot of people, the fear of failure in the sense that like if you just sit at home and don't go out and do the things that you want to do, then it's easy to say someday I will.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think people think if I start and then I realize that I'm not good, I'm not worthy, I'm not able, capable, whatever, then it's over. Yeah. Then it's, you know, but people really don't realize that doesn't happen. Yeah. It doesn't happen that you find out, like you just keep going. Everything keeps going. It's all moving. It's all in transition. Yes.
Well, not to be really dramatic about it, but I've always thought that
we love drama.
I've always thought that working out and sort of your own trajectory, your own path, is very Joseph Campbell. Like it's your hero's journey. Like you're going to resist it.
Yeah.
You're going to get the call. I need to change my life. You're going to say no. You're going to go on the journey. You're going to be challenged. You're going to almost die. But then at the other side, you're like, holy shit, look what I did. And I feel like you kind of go on that journey in a class or in your own personal fitness.
And what's better for our kids than to see their parents out there taking care of themselves and loving their bodies? I mean, for me, it's always been a struggle because I'm not a size 0 or 2. And in Hollywood, it's a big thing. And I want to say this because I feel like I have to say this every time I say this, is that there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that for me, it's been a struggle.
Sabrina's sleeping upstairs. The passion.
I got very passionate about it. But it was a big thing to change my focus on being healthy and strong, and not that I have to lose weight or be smaller. And the crazy thing that happened with that was when I was pregnant and I looked back at pictures of myself, I was like, shit, my body was fantastic. And I was this whole time railing against it.
When I was pregnant, I was very, I was sick the first few months. Like I felt so nauseated. I would go on the elliptical and I would want to I would get seasick. Like I'd want to throw up off the side of it. And I don't know what listeners out there, obviously I'm not a doctor, so don't do this if you're pregnant. If you don't feel comfortable or figure it out yourself, I'm not going to be responsible for you. But I would go to SoulCycle when I was pregnant and I would go to your class, and it was the one thing I could do, even though it's like super hardcore, right? But after the first 10 minutes, the nausea would – is that how you say that word?
Yeah.
It would go away. And I would feel fine. And maybe it helps that they have like gum at the front desk. But I would wear the earplugs and I would do it. And by the end, I would feel so good. And it's crazy because nothing, I couldn't do anything else. And I love working out. But mm-hmm. that was the one thing I could do. If I could get on the bike and get through the first 5 minutes, I knew I'd be able to have a great workout. And I was already in good shape. See, because I'm worried now about like pregnant moms jumping on the bike. I don't want to feel responsible.
Well, no. Obviously, they have to get their doctor's permission.
Yeah, they have to do
all
that.
I have pregnant moms all the time who are riding on their due date. And I tell them to go easy, you know, listen to your body and what your doctor said. But they're like, I just want to be in this room. They're like, I just want to pedal and just break a sweat and like take in all the energy. Yeah. Like that's for their mind. Like they leave and they're just like, ah.
Yeah, it was so helpful for me. And then the funny thing was that when I came back for the first time after giving birth, when I walked in the room, the smell reminded me of my morning sickness.
Oh my God. So funny.
Because that was because that's the last time I had smelled that smell was like when I had morning sickness. And then it felt so good to be back. And it's that was such a gift to like have something that I could go do to feel good again, just for like a short period. I was so grateful to have found that.
What does Carlo think about what you do? I mean, she's
still pretty young, but it's funny you say about the music, because my wife wrote up until after her due date, and I'm convinced that Harlow was listening to the music the whole time. Every time you put on a song, she is just moving, she is dancing like crazy. She comes to the studio a lot, and our nanny will watch her while I'm teaching, and my wife is writing.
I was wondering who watches, because I'll see her in the front, and it's like so adorable.
Yeah.
All the
she'll dance, and and the whole staff is amazing. They're like a second family. So she just loves going there to daddy's work. Like, I think she knows that it's a bike and she knows that there's music.
Yeah.
And she knows there's a lot of yellow because she can say yellow now. She goes, yellow.
I love that.
That's so funny. Well, thank you so much for
thanks for having me.
Coming and talking and sharing your energy and your positivity with us, because I think that that's you know, I feel like for moms who may be not in New York or LA, it was SoulCycle anywhere else.
It's everywhere.
And we're growing so quickly now. We're in Chicago now. We're in Boston. We're up north in San Francisco. We're in Miami.
If you're in town, check it out. I actually went to one in Brooklyn. I had like a red eye flight and I was exhausted. And I was like, well, let me see where class is nearby. Because it really does. It can shift
everything.
That's
what's amazing about it now. Like, you know you're going to get the experience if you're traveling. You're like, oh, I have it. I have my sanctuary.
Yes.
You know?
It really helps with the – especially with, like, acclimating, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But even if our listeners are somewhere where they can't access, you know, a SoulCycle, you guys, there's so many things out there now. And sometimes it's just a matter of getting online and researching and talking to people that live in your town or city. Because there are so many different places now where it doesn't have to – kill you with cardio. It could just be a place where you go and you receive positivity while you're maybe doing a little bit of exercise, or even something as simple as sitting and talking.
And online too, like with YouTube, that's pretty amazing. Like if you're a mom out there who is, you know, doesn't have access to this, or like can't find a sitter for your kid or whatever, if you go on YouTube on your phone, there's like a million different options. We'll put some on our Facebook page, but you can get a good workout in 10 minutes. Like you can feel it can shift your perspective. It can make me a little less angry or crazy.
Yeah. And there's some really funny things out there too. I know at one point my sister and I were putting on videos that were just making us laugh because it was these crazy people trying to teach dance lessons. And it's like sometimes just doing something that makes you laugh is enough to bust you out of, you know, the doldrums. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, sorry, I'm currently on my SoulCycle app reserving my next class with David.
Oh my God, it's so inspiring. Like I want to go work out right now, and I even worked out before I got here. And I did the hill to your house.
I know, that was enough. okay, so mom bum first?
Sure.
Okay, mine is from David. So his Twitter handle is @spinvillain, and it's V-I-L-L-A-I-N. Okay. You're like, yeah, that's obvious. I misspell it every time I type it in. Okay. Anyway, I've got two of them from him. Okay, ready? One of his tweets is, "People who talk behind your back are behind you for a reason."
Whoa.
Isn't that good? He says that in class. I love it. Okay, and another thing he says in class is, "Mistakes are there for a reason. They're your greatest teachers. They guide you."
That's a good one. It's good to remember that, because sometimes you get so down on yourself when you make mistakes and things happen. But you know what? You're going to end up where you're going to end up. That was so profound what I just said. Not at all. It like made no sense. Anyway, mom session. So this is a little one I made up, but I just did it recently and it made a big difference for me. Remember we were talking in the one episode about how I needed my brain organized. Mm-hmm. And so we came up with my good friend Jen Roban. It came up with the to-do list takedown. And basically what that is, which is great because mamas and papas, you can do this and give yourself more time so you can go work out and go do things that make you feel good. But I sat in bed. I gave myself, I think, like a time limit of a half an hour and I made it fun. I got all sorts of different colored pieces of paper and pens. Yeah, no joke. And I did a to-do list for every room in my house and for miscellaneous things. And I just did to-do list diarrhea all over.
Did you do it also for the
pages?
So you're saying every room of your house, but also like for this project, like what you're going to put up on Facebook.
Exactly. Like the jobs that I have to do for the podcast. I did things that I need to do to make Ellie happy. I did
rub my back.
But everything's there. And then I put them up somewhere I can see them, preferably not in the bedroom because Jen Roban says that should be a sacred space. But I have one room that's kind of our guest room / playroom. And I put them all up on the wall. And then it's so satisfying when you go, you make a plan for the next couple of weeks, a calendar if you want, if that's the easiest way to do it, when you're going to do those things and you start crossing those puppies off. And I'm telling you, it's so empowering and it feels so good. And then you just start to see those items come off those mm-hmm. lists. And I think just having it all in one place where you can see it, it's so freeing.
Yeah, we're so scatterbrained these days. I can't remember anything.
Yeah.
So like my mini version of that is the reminders thing on my phone, like on iPhones, you can do reminders. And I will just type out everything that I have to do in the next week. And then it feels so satisfying pressing that little button for it to disappear.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go get some colored pens.
Do it. It's so much fun. A little creative. Right. And you know what? Then like Sabrina could color with you.
It's good.
A little project. You guys, we love you. And remember,
love you
in your goodness.
Live out your greatness.
And rock on.
Atomic Moms. Hey guys, quick reminder, you can find us on Instagram at Atomic Moms, on Facebook, Atomic Moms page.
Twitter at Atomic Moms. Shocking.
It's shocking. And please leave us reviews on iTunes under Atomic Moms and subscribe so you get it every single week because it's every Wednesday, people. So subscribe and leave us a review and read the other reviews because they're pretty awesome.
We're pretty fantastic. We do say so ourselves. I'd
say our reviewers are fantastic.
Well, both. We're all fantastic.
Everyone wins. We're all good.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudeen posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.